ETC is go.
Pacific is go.
ETC is go.
Copy, S is go.
Houston flight is go.
Pilot go.
STM is go.
Safety comp is go.
STU is go.
LRD is go.
SRO is go.
CDI is go.
Launch director NTD, our launch team is ready to proceed at this time.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Site Patriots has a message for liberals and the mainstream media.
You can't handle the truth.
So, buckle up, snowflakes, because we're about to deliver the politically direct best in conservative commentary, news, and investigative reports. We're telling the truth, and we're not gonna stop. Okay, liberals, back under the bridge with the rest of your fellow trolls, and oh yeah, thanks for listening to Right Side Patriots.
They are special, special people
on RSPRadio1.com. Welcome to Right Side Patriots on RSPRadio1.com. Craig Andreessen at the National Patriot, and I am sorry, at the Patriot Factor, 4th of May, Tuesday night edition of the show. Welcome to it. Hello, Diane.
Hello, Craig. Hard to believe it's May already.
I know. Sheesh.
I know. 7 more months till Christmas.
Well, thanks for ruining my day. I think,
yeah, but Christmas shopping starts in about another month, according to the stores.
Well, that's true. They'll start putting the decorations up.
Mm-hmm.
I think, I'm not sure, but I think today might be the anniversary of, it's either the anniversary of Alan Shepard's first flight. You know, in the Mercury capsule?
Right.
Or it's Alan Shepard's birthday. One or the other. It's right around this time, May 4th, 5th, 6th, something like that.
Okay. Into NASA right now, and I'm not seeing anything.
Just look up Alan Shepard.
Okay.
He was America's first astronaut in space, folks. He was also on the moon, on the surface of the moon, with Apollo 14. He's the one that actually hit a golf ball on the moon.
Right. I remember seeing those pictures.
Yeah.
It's the 40th anniversary. Well, it's the 40th anniversary of Mercury 7.
Okay. That was him, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. There you go.
Okay, so it was something.
It was something, you know.
Okay. Hey, anything just, space is good.
Just popped into my head. When I looked at the date, I thought, holy cow, this date rings a bell with Alan Shepard. So
well, you know, speaking of space, I'm wondering if that Chinese rocket or satellite, whatever it is that broke up in the atmosphere, I wonder if it's hit anything yet on Earth.
Yeah. Nobody knows where that thing's going to come down. Of course, you know, it's got two-thirds of a chance of hitting water, you know, mm-hmm. about one-third chance of hitting land, but it does go over some pretty populated areas, including New York and Beijing.
Yeah. Isn't that apropos? Maybe it could, you know, the people that gave us coronavirus, maybe they could get a little payback here. Now, yeah. That's mean, isn't it?
Well, it maybe it is, but it's still funny.
Yeah.
You know? No, that thing is supposed to, in the next day or two, it's a rocket booster. They set up a rocket to take part of what's supposed to be their version of a space station or something.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the big booster part of that that's coming down uncontrolled and God only knows where.
Right, and they hope to have this new space station actually partly with the Russians to compete against the International Space Station, which the Russians have pulled out of ever since we now take our own astronauts, you know, thanks to SpaceX. But when you think about, you know, Mercury 7, and you think all the way back those years, and while, you know, we didn't see the originals, we were, you know, some of us weren't even born then for Mercury 7, but when you think about how far we've come since then, and then suddenly, you know, we're stopped.
Right.
Because the Democrats are in power now. You know, here it was, we've got Space Force, and you don't hear about it anymore. I wonder if the Democrats did something to it.
Not yet. I mean, I kind of look in on that from time to time, but you don't really hear much going on there.
No. And what people need to remember, whether you like it or not, he who controls space controls Earth.
It's true. Mm-hmm. 100% true. Folks, we got a lot of stuff to talk about tonight. There is some breaking news that we're going to get into here in just a minute, and it all kind of works with the two main segments of the show tonight. Diane and I have co-written a special report, not an investigative report, not necessarily an op-ed or a commentary. We're calling it a special report.
Right. It's kind of a little bit of all of that melded together.
Yeah, a melting pot of aggression is the title. You'd find it under. You'll find it over at Diane's blog, thepatriotfactor.blogspot.com, and on my blog, thenationalpatriot.com. So, and we're going to get into that in just a couple of minutes here. You know, at the bottom of the hour, we'll take a break and then we'll launch into that. But getting us there, we got to talk about what's going on with the Derek Chauvin trial. I know a lot of people, you know, trial's over. You know, they convicted him on all counts, and, you know, then the questions started. Well, yesterday the questions got even more interesting because a fellow by the name of Brandon Mitchell, mm-hmm. who was juror number 52, okay?
Yes.
He was not an alternate. He was one of the actual jurors on this thing. Well, it comes out that last August he was at a rally, a march of some sort, and the photos came out. He's wearing a Get Your Knee Off Our Necks BLM t-shirt and a BLM hat. That was last right. August.
Right. This took place in Washington, D.C., and it had speeches by Floyd's siblings. You know, this was advertised. He knew where he was going. And then he tries to say, well, it was to honor Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Really? Wearing a BLM shirt? Dr. King would not have supported BLM.
No, Dr. King would not support BLM. But, and, you know, folks, you'll learn more about this as we go through the evening. Mm-hmm. The BLM kind of gloms onto things. Now, Dr. King's photo on the t-shirt? Yep. But it also had Get Your Knees Off Our Necks and BLM on there. Okay, the hat said BLM. Of course, this guy, Mitchell, Brandon Mitchell, he says, well, you know, this was a, like Diane said, this was a Martin Luther King thing, and it was really more to get people registered to vote because the election was coming up in November, and this was in August, and, you know, it was a voter thing. Well, you know, does it really matter what it was? If you show up wearing BLM garb and get your knee off our necks, and then you tell the, you know, when you're sitting there getting chosen for jury duty and they ask you, have you been to any of these BLM marches? Have you been to any of these BLM events or these George Floyd events? And you know that George Floyd's siblings were speaking at that event that you were wearing the BLM garb to, and you say no?
Well, it goes even a little more than that, because the march he actually went to, this August 28th, 2020 march, was specifically billed as anti-police brutality. And this was said by Chauvin's attorney, Joe Tamburino. Now, he was not associated with the case per se. However, it was only partially advertised as you get your knee off our necks, and it had speakers from the Floyd family, Breonna Taylor's family, and Jacob Blake family, all people supposedly murdered by police. And it was basically a combination of the Floyd and police brutality. Now, this whole case was about, the Chauvin case is about police brutality. So this man, he lied, he committed perjury, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, yeah.
This case needs to be overturned. And then again, you can't try Chauvin again because it's double jeopardy. So you just know that the Democrats are going to find a way to whitewash this whole thing and make it go away because, you know, the element's going to act badly again if this is overturned.
Well, and to add to all of this, okay, the main attorney, Eric Nelson, he was the defense attorney for Derek Chauvin. Mm-hmm. He has now filed a motion seeking a new trial in the death of George Floyd, and the argument is that Chauvin's constitutional right to a fair trial was violated multiple times throughout the proceeding.
Correct. But I would actually go for an overturning, and because, you know, there is double jeopardy involved, I think in this case it's better to overturn it than it is to do a new trial.
Well, and I honestly, I'm not sure exactly how that works.
I'm not either. I'm, you know, guessing. But you can't, there is such a thing as double jeopardy.
Well, there is.
You can't try for the same thing twice, although they can kind of manipulate it and make it a little bit different charges, maybe.
Right, right. And I would fully expect they would do that.
Right.
You know, but I'm really not completely sure how that works. I'm not an attorney. I don't play one on the radio, but it seems to me that if you're filing a motion seeking a new trial, where on this planet could Derek Chauvin now get a fair trial where nobody's heard about this?
You can't.
You can't.
No.
It's impossible.
Unless you find some hermit who's been offline for the past 20 years, there's no place he can get a fair trial. And again, I'm not saying what he did is right with the knee, but medical evidence has said there were no marks. There was no crushing of the windpipe. There's nothing that would be consistent with heavy pressing into the knee. And all of this brouhaha is over a convicted felon, a hardcore drug addict, a man who put a gun to the belly of a pregnant woman. This is who they're defending.
I know, it's crazy. Now, get this, folks. Here's what this Eric Nelson, the defense attorney, this is what he's saying in this motion, and I think he's 100% right. He said, the court abused its discretion and violated Mr. Chauvin's rights under the Confrontation Clause when it failed to order Maurice Hall to testify or, in the alternative, to admit into evidence Mr. Hall's statements to law enforcement regarding his interactions with George Floyd and presence at the May 25th, 2020 incident. Now, this Hall is a drug dealer, a drug user. He was there. He was with Floyd. He apparently told investigators that Floyd was high, that he ingested all these drugs and everything else. Nelson also said the court abused its discretion when it submitted instructions to the jury that failed to accurately reflect the law with respect to second-degree unintentional murder, third-degree murder, and unauthorized use of force. He said that the prosecutors, he's accusing them of pervasive prejudicial prosecutorial misconduct, and he's alleging that jurors convicted Chauvin on charges that the evidence did not sufficiently support. I think he's right on all of that.
Yeah, Holt actually took the Fifth Amendment, you know, where he did not have to testify. But again, they are defending that our country has been turned upside down for a career criminal and a hardcore drug addict. There's something wrong here.
Inherently wrong.
Yes, it makes no sense at all. No sense at all. This is who they're defending. I just don't get it. In fact, I was telling Craig last night, what has happened to our country? Really, seriously, guys, what has happened? Now, we are going to tell you what's happened. Maybe this is our good little teaser for Friday, Craig.
Friday night, folks, it's going to be a talk show. We're not doing, preset segments way we are, you know, tonight and the way we often do. It's 100% talk. It's right off the top of our heads. And we are literally going to say things and bring out things and expose things on Friday night show starting at 7 o'clock Eastern time that a lot of people around the country are thinking, but everybody's too afraid to say it out loud.
Not only that, they're afraid to put it in writing because social media will not let it go out. We're going to say what is really on our conservative minds. Of course, we can't speak for Democrats, but we're going to tell you some truths that I think many people know but don't even want to admit are truths.
Yeah, I think you make a good point there. I think a lot of people look at this stuff and go, oh, I don't know. I don't want to say anything or offend anybody. Yep. People are walking on eggshells, and it's ridiculous. It's got to stop.
Right. We're going to offend.
we are going to be offensive to some. Yes.
Yes.
There's no
doubt
about it. And
we're going to be champions to others.
You don't want to miss Friday's show, folks. That's what we're telling you.
Right.
You want to be here. You want to be tuned in. You do not want to miss a minute of this Friday's show.
And it's going to be totally unscripted and unprepared.
You know, it's going to kind of work its way along with what we're doing tonight.
Right.
But we're going to open up a whole bunch of cans of worms and a whole bunch of cans of whoop-ass.
Yes.
So.
And thank goodness we're on internet radio.
Yeah, otherwise it would be our last broadcast ever.
Yes.
You know. We in terrestrial radio, we used to joke about things like that. You know, should we do this, whatever this is? We're like, well, yeah, but maybe we should save it for the last show we ever decide to do.
Well, you know what? This stuff is a long time coming. And, you know, 74 million people don't buy that Joe Biden got 80 million votes. Right. Well, we're going to, you know, let you know what has really pushed that. Besides the voter fraud, there's something else behind it, folks. And I think a lot of you know, but don't want to admit it even to yourselves.
Yeah, we're gonna get into it on Friday. Mm-hmm. Now, in the time we have left in this segment, let's kind of shift gears a little bit here, because Joe Biden has done something that is par for the course and absolutely atrocious. A lot of folks, you know, when you talk about the border and immigration and this and that, a lot of people don't really understand all the details of you know, different aspects of our immigration system. We have something called a refugee cap, okay? And that is the number of refugees that we will allow into this country in a given year. Now,
legally. legally allow.
Legally, you know. President Trump set the number at 15,000.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Now, it may seem like a lot to some, may not seem like very many to some. Okay? But 15,000 refugees. Now, you got to understand what a refugee is in legal sense. A refugee is somebody whose life is in danger in the country of their origin, right, and they are fleeing from some political or religious persecution in their country, and they're literally, their lives are in danger. That is, in a nutshell, what a refugee is. So you think 15,000, okay, mm-hmm, whatever. Well, Joe Biden has slightly increased that number. Diane, what's the new number?
The new number is 62,500 refugees. Now,
Rats.
Like I said, these people can come in here legally. They are legitimate refugees, and we have always taken legitimate refugees in. Now, Biden says, you know, he's going to do 65,000 a year. How is 500 a year? Now, what about the hundreds of thousands of the illegals that have already come in?
Yeah, well, this will be an addition. This will be an addition.
I'm sorry, it's only May.
Now, also, you know, I kind of gave you the nutshell version of what an actual refugee is. But you got to know that under the Biden administration, when liberals are in charge, okay, a refugee, somebody whose life is at stake in their home country, could literally be fleeing the fact that in their country, they can only get one-ply toilet paper. I mean, the rules are completely loosened up as to what a refugee actually is.
Well, to make it worse, Craig, what his actual intended goal is, by the coming fiscal year, he wants that 65,000 to go up to 125,000.
No.
And think about that, folks. Oh, yes, I'm looking right at the numbers.
Here's the biggest problem. They're not going to vet any of these people. You can bank on that.
Correct.
Okay, anybody that shows up the border and says, I'm a refugee, great, right, come on in. They're
and
not going to look at their
that
history.
Is they're increasing these numbers to undo the damage that President Trump did.
My
President
ass.
Trump didn't do any damage. President Trump put a much-needed Band-Aid on our country to help us start the healing of allowing any and everyone into this country. We are not the world's garbage pail, nor do we have to be.
No. No, but if you listen to Jen Psaki, puppet's puppet, okay?
Yeah.
You know, Biden is fixing all the problems that Trump intentionally caused at the border. And Biden's on top of this, and he's gonna make this right, and he's gonna fix all these. I'm thinking, what problems? What problems? I mean, we virtually ended illegal entry into this country. Yeah, it was still happening. It wasn't completely done, but boy, had it slowed down from the Obama regime. Okay.
Yep.
We were getting a grip on, you know, who's going to get sent back and everything. Not only that, but Trump put out their deterrence. Hey, don't come here, because if you do, boom, you're going right back.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or you're going to wind up in jail and this and that. He put out deterrence, and those caravans stopped. They stopped.
Yes.
Right? But Biden sent out engraved invitations, come one, come all. And they are coming. Those caravans are in full force. He stopped the wall. He's pulled ICE and border agents out of there, out of the border area. And it's now a free-for-all. It's a damn crisis.
Right.
But that's the liberal version of fixing the problem, see? It's crazy.
It's very, very, very crazy, and it's very dangerous because these are not refugees, folks. These are assorted drug dealers and murderers and third world Muslim country terrorists trying to come in here. And what they're doing is basically laying out the welcome mat.
Well, you
and
left
it's
out
more of our taxpayer dollars being wasted. I'm sorry, a real refugee looks very different than the people that are coming across.
You left out human traffickers.
And human traffickers, yes.
Look at what happened in San Diego, or just off the coast of San Diego over the weekend. You know, that was a boatload of quote-unquote refugees, right? Those weren't refugees. Mm-hmm. Those were victims of human trafficking that were being shipped in here when that boat capsized. At least 3 people died. Over 30 were injured and had to be fished out of shark-infested waters off of San Diego. I mean, this is what's going on here, you know? And you look at these people, right? You look at these people that are pouring across the border on a daily basis, and I mean by the damn thousands.
Yeah.
These people didn't walk up here from Guatemala.
No. With their, you know, with their Prada purses, and they're nice and like, chunky, you know, they're well-fed, and they got their cell phones, and they've got their iPads. These are not refugees, folks.
No. These are people looking for a free handout in exchange for a vote.
Yes.
Yeah. That's all they. That's what it's going to cost them. Their votes.
Right. And they'll willingly give it. You know, Craig, can I switch topics totally right now?
Yes.
Just to tell people, it's official. President Trump has launched his new site. It's called From the Desk of Donald J. Trump, and it's already operational. I signed up a while ago to receive his whenever he tweets or does anything. Right now, you know, it's strictly him. It will expand in the future. But just as he launched this afternoon, Facebook is now considering allowing him back.
I don't think he wants back.
He doesn't need Facebook.
I don't think he wants back on Facebook.
I don't think he does either.
Twitter, he doesn't want any part of that. He's got his own platform now, and like Diane did, folks, you can sign up too, and every time he sends out a tweet, and you can bet he's going to be sending out a lot of tweets.
And it's more than tweets, because he can write as, you know, long or short as he wants. And I've already gotten about 15, 20 of them.
You know,
This is great. It's either doing one of two things. It's either setting the stage for a 2024 run, Trump DeSantis, yay. Or it's setting the stage, I believe, for a Santis Gnome.
It could very well be.
Yeah.
You know, the very first thing he should have put up there for notification to the public was 3 words.
What?
Miss me yet?
Yeah. Absolutely.
How great would that have been?
Absolutely. Well, I just figured I'd tell people because, you know, we've been waiting a long time for this. And from what I'm understanding, eventually it will be interactive. But right now, it's From the Desk of Donald J. Trump. That's the name of it.
Get over there, folks. Get yourself signed up for those notifications. You'll be glad you did.
Yes.
Know what's going on.
Yes.
All right. We got to take a bottom of the hour break here. When we come back, we'll get into part one of A Melting Pot of Aggression. We've got 2 more segments on the show tonight. Both are dedicated to that, A Melting Pot of Aggression. And again, you can find this special report on both Diane's blog and my blog, the patriotfactor.blogspot.com and thenationalpatriot.com. that's where you find it, and you'll want to grab that link, and you'll want to get it out there and share it. What we did, this was probably about 2 weeks ago, Diana and I were sitting here talking on Skype one afternoon, and you know, we started talking about certain things that we just don't see much anymore. We said, I wonder what happened to those groups. I wonder what happened to those people. Well, we started looking into it, and Diane said, do you think we ought to do an article on this, do a combined thing? And I'm like, yeah.
Yeah. You know? We originally were going to do it as an investigative report. But when we got done, we realized it's not really an investigative report. It's what we believe, but we've got the facts to back it up.
So, folks, you stay where you are. We'll prepare ourselves if you prepare yourselves. And we'll be back in a couple of minutes with more Right Side Patriots after this.
Hi, guys. Diane Sori from The Patriot Factor on thepatriotfactor.blogspot.com. Where I found a home base 7 years ago after becoming one of Facebook's longtime Facebook felons, or so I've been told by the Facebook gods. On my blog, you will find not only my articles, but our Right Side Patriots investigative reports, as well as stories and links to and from well-known writers and bloggers, plus what I call almost daily memes, my snarky take on news of the day. And for more great takes on the issues of the day, check out the National Patriot at thenationalpatriot.com, where you can read Craig's insight into all the current news happenings. And join us both on Right Side Patriots every Tuesday and Friday night from 7 to 9 p.m. EST at rspradio1.com.
You're listening to Right Side Patriots Radio, the best in conservative commentary, news, and talk, where we do away with the politically correct nonsense and give you the politically direct truth. This is the home of Right Side Patriots every Tuesday and Friday night from 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern with Craig Andreessen and Diane Sori. We're working to make this country great again from the right and leaving puddles of melted snowflakes on the left. Thanks for listening to Right Side Patriots, your best bet on the internet.
You're listening to RSPRadio1.com.
Welcome back to Right Side Patriots on RSPRadio1.com. Craig Andreessen at the National Patriot and Diane Sori right over there at the Patriot Factor getting you through Tuesday evening. Thank you for joining us. We appreciate it. If you miss any part of the show tonight, you want to go over to rspradio1.com tomorrow morning, click on the podcast button, and there we will be.
Yes.
Just that simple. And, again, don't miss this Friday show.
Yeah, it's going to be a doozy, let's put it that way.
I got a feeling we're going to light a few people's hair on fire.
I think so.
I really do. All right, so let's get into this topic. Diane and I, a couple of weeks ago, we started talking about a few things that seemed to be missing from the landscape, and we decided that we should write a joint piece on this. And this is what it all led to. It's called A Melting Pot of Aggression. So where have they all gone? All those individual, racist, hateful, radical, and oftentimes violent black organizations that used to rear their heads every 4 years around election time. Where are the new Black Panthers? Where is the Nation of Islam? Why is it that we just don't hear from them any longer? Those are the questions that we at Right Side Patriots found ourselves asking recently, and we decided to look into it. While the left has continued to decry all white hate and supremacy groups, they never took such a stance against those groups primarily made up of and run by members of the so-called black community, although that term is greatly misleading. The so-called black community is comprised of a definitive minority of black Americans whose goal has always been to cause upheaval, strife, divisiveness, and promote racism on their terms. You see, the left side of the political aisle, while well known for their pro-slavery stand, starting the KKK, inventing and promoting Jim Crow laws, and then segregation, simply tolerated such black racist groups as the Black Panthers, the New Black Panthers, and the Nation of Islam for the purpose of political expediency. But there's a great deal of difference between tolerating such groups and accepting them. We'll get back to that later in this special report. But before we do, let's first have a look at the aforementioned black-based radical militant racist groups that just seem to have disappeared from the social conscience. We'll start with the Nation of Islam. Louis Farrakhan has led the Nation of Islam since about 1977. It is a racist, anti-Semitic hate group masquerading as a religious organization that promotes a radical Islamic agenda. Basically, it's a cult of sorts, and members of it dare not cross Farrakhan lest they become targets of violence. Farrakhan, Diane, is a community organizer who has cobbled together a supposed following of some 50,000, but is most likely much less impressive in its actual numbers.
Well, Louis Farrakhan does have a way of over-inflating numbers regarding anything he does. Remember, he had a well-publicized march that he way blew out of proportion.
Boy, that's an absolute fact. You know, it used to be that Farrakhan could whip a crowd into a frenzy, and through the use of slick promotion, he could put together something like the Million Man March. But make no mistake, he and his organization always piggybacked on whatever was the hot topic of the day to create a stir. Nothing Farrakhan nor the Nation of Islam has done under his so-called leadership has been organic or standalone as an NOI event. Farrakhan used Jesse Jackson's political ambitions as a vehicle for gaining press for NOI and for publicizing his Million Man March back in 1995. To this day, he still refers to it as the Million Man March, even though there weren't half that many people at the event. In fact, Farrakhan threatened to sue the National Park Service because of their headcount not living up to his bragging. Over recent years, Farrakhan has been less and less the leader and more the figurehead of the organization, due in part to health problems and due in part to what appears to be flagging interest in his agenda. Now, we believe those that remain as elite in that organization simply lack the charisma to engage their membership to any great extent. Let's be honest here. From its inception back in the 1930s through its time under the leadership of Elijah Muhammad through the 1960s, the Nation of Islam relied on high-profile members, people like Muhammad Ali and Malcolm X, to garner followers. Islam is not a religion. It's a political ideology, and the NOI has never been anything but a political organization. As such, they have only ever appealed to a radical, rebellious element of black Americans and never really reached the mainstream of black America the way Dr. King did. But you see, Dr. King was about being colorblind, while the NOI has always been a racist organization. As the NOI's approach became less radical in the early to mid-1970s, Farrakhan stepped in and revived the radical agenda in 1977 for a brand new generation of black racists. To bolster his own self-promotion, in 1985, Farrakhan claimed to have been teleported. I'm not making this up. Teleported aboard what he called the mother plane, as though he were some sort of divine Islamic prophet. You see, Diane, for a time, Farrakhan was the most charismatic so-called leader a generation of black racists had. They followed him like sheep. but the Nation of Islam was about to be replaced in the early 2000s, and it's been a shell of whatever it used to be ever since. To be clear, the Nation of Islam did not suddenly vanish. It just sort of faded into the shadows, while its dwindling membership and powerless elite looked for something to which they could hitch their broken-down wagon.
Now, folks, before we get into exactly whom they hitched said wagon to, know that other black racist groups were forming and spreading their own unique version of hate at the same time the Nation of Islam was still commanding an audience of sorts. And said audience included the Marxist-leaning Black Panther Party, the cornerstone of what became the Black Power Movement, a movement that gave birth, if you will, to what amounts to today's militant black separatist groups. Founded in 1966 by college students Bobby Seale, he was one of the original Chicago Eight, charged with conspiracy relating to anti-Vietnam War protests during the 1968 Democrat National Convention, and Huey B. Newton. The Black Panthers were so hell-bent on tearing down the very foundation of our country that back in the mid-1960s, then FBI Director J. Edgar Hoover labeled them, quote, the greatest threat to the internal security of the country, end quote. In fact, by the end of the 1960s, the Black Panther Party had been targeted with 233 FBI counterintelligence operations, operations known as COINTELPO, put in place to, quote, expose, disrupt, misdirect, discredit, or otherwise neutralize alleged subversive political organizations, of which the Black Panthers was so designated, as was their offshoot, the Black Liberation Army. Outwardly espousing an ideology of black nationalism, black separatism, white hatred, overt socialism, and armed self-defense primarily against what they claimed was police brutality, specifically directed against its members and black folks in general. Now, that sounds eerily familiar to today's ongoing situation. And while the Black Panther Party remained notoriously active throughout the 1970s, the group officially disbanded in 1982 due to infighting amongst party leadership, jockeying for power, coupled with party defections and musings of criminal activities. And as membership numbers dropped, so too did the group's importance in the political landscape. However, even in its disbandment, the legacy of the Black Panthers lived on, for they, Craig, had successfully laid the foundation of hate upon which other Black Power movements would build on while assembling the framework for what has now become the Democrats' and the media-driven charge of systemic racism being leveled against our country.
You know, as a kid, I remember watching the news at 5:30, Walter Cronkite, and, you know, CBS News. As a kid, we always had it on in the house. I remember hearing the names, you know, Huey P. Newton and Bobby Seale, you know, and the trouble and the, you know, the things. I remember the 1968 Olympics in Mexico City when some of our black athletes were given the Black Power salute on the victory stand. And you know, those names again would come up and again would come up. Now, as the Black Panthers faded away, what replaced them and how original was the replacement?
Well, it wasn't that original, but one of the first black groups to profit from the Black Panther Party legacy and push forward their own special brand of hate was a group who actually tried to capitalize off the Black Panther name itself. A group calling itself the New Black Panthers. Founded in 1989 by Aaron Michaels, after the murder of Black Panther founder Huey P. Newton by a drug-dealing gang member of the Black Guerrilla family, the New Black Panthers tried hard to pass itself off as a, quote, militant, more modern-day expression, end quote, of the original Black Panther Party. However, when the group's main leadership switched from Michaels to Khalid Abdul-Muhammad, a former member of the aforementioned Louis Farrakhan's Nation of Islam, the original Black Panthers' ideology of black equality and self-defense against police brutality was thrown by the wayside as Muhammad started filling the new Black Panthers' ranks with disgruntled ex-Nation of Islam members and other black Muslims, which shifted the group's objective towards a more extremist and more dangerous form of black nationalism. And this included their seeing capitalism as the, quote, fundamental problem with the world, revolution as the solution, while at the same time acknowledging a universal spirituality with the infamous Nation of Islam. And once again, this sounds eerily familiar, what with the new Black Panthers also calling for the, quote, right to self-determination for black people, especially blacks here in our country, and garnering such by any means possible. And it's this that has led the Anti-Defamation League, the Southern Poverty Law Center, and the U.S. Commission on Civil Rights to designate the new Black Panthers as a racist, anti-Semitic, anti-Zionist hate group, which they are, for they have publicly advocated for, quote, the killing of Jews and white people. And yet, for all the new Black Panthers' bravado many members of the original Black Panthers want no part of, said bravado included, among other things, numerous instances of voter intimidation and publicly sticking their noses into both the Duke lacrosse scandal and the Trayvon Martin fiasco, where they put a $10,000 bounty on the capture of Martin's killer, George Zimmerman. But they, like the Nation of Islam, seemed to have disappeared from the political and public discourse, because not only did they fail to make strong enough inroads into the majority of America's black communities, but their much-needed cash flow dried up. Running a domestic terrorist group is indeed an expensive endeavor. But one has to wonder if both groups have really disappeared, or, Craig, have they combined forces and morphed into something else entirely? And it's here where the group, known as Black Lives Matter, enters the picture.
We're going to get into the Black Lives Matter and more coming up in the next segment. But before we get to that, let's kind of talk back about some of the things that we've just gone over here. There's so many crossovers between the Nation of Islam and the new Black Panthers, and yes, not the least of which is assassinations. Okay.
Yes.
Huey P. Long, new Black Panthers. He was assassinated, or he was part of the original Black Panthers. He was assassinated, just as Malcolm X from the Nation of Islam was assassinated. That's how these groups tend to want to shift power. And it's the type of thing you see in third world, fascist states. You know,
right, is the fact that many of the disgruntled, like I said, Nation of Islam followers were quickly absorbed into the new Black Panthers.
Right.
It was basically one and the same group with a different name.
Yeah, whichever one was going to be the more radical, the more radical of the other groups would gravitate to it. Okay,
right.
So, for instance, if there were people in the Nation of Islam that were members of the Nation of Islam that wanted to be more radical than the Nation of Islam was being, they moved over to the new Black Panthers.
Right.
Because, they thought they found a home there.
Well, the biggest thing that the new Black Panthers was and is still known for is voter intimidation. They were the groups that were standing outside threatening people who were going in to vote.
Yeah, you and I did articles about that.
All over the news before Obama's first election.
You and I did articles about that. We had photos of them standing out front of polling places in Philadelphia, for instance.
Yes.
You know, standing there looking thuggish in paramilitary-looking gear, trying to intimidate people. I mean, that's kind of what they do. You know,
and they still do it to a lesser degree.
Yeah, but, you know, they've just kind of, you don't hear about them the way you did, let's say, 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 15 years ago. I mean, they've just kind of evaporated a little bit, or have they? That's what we're getting into in the next segment. Right. Now, right. I said as a kid, I remembered in the news, you know, of course, hearing names like Huey P. Long and Bobby Seale and, you know, all of that stuff. As a kid, I also remember hearing elements of the Nation of Islam. Elijah Muhammad, when I was a kid, was the head of the Nation of Islam. Malcolm X was one of the main people in the Nation of Islam. You know, and from the time I was a little kid, I think I was about four years old when I first came to know who Muhammad Ali was. Okay. And Muhammad Ali was a follower of what he called the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. Okay, so he was a follower of the Nation of Islam. Then you had other high-profile black athletes. Lew Alcindor became Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
Exactly.
You know, exactly. And so on and so forth. And they all kind of fell into that Nation of Islam, you know, umbrella, so to speak.
That's one thing I will say, though, about Muhammad Ali, although I think, you know, he was foolish to give up his name Cassius Clay for these lunatics. Muhammad Ali always had problems with the violence they did.
Yeah, he never went in for that.
The violence.
Yeah. Ali, either to his credit or sadly to his detriment, always viewed Islam as more of a religion than an ideology.
Right.
Okay.
Right. He was one of the few that did that.
Yeah, he was willing to lose his boxing license and not be able to fight and earn a living for several years because he refused to go to Vietnam because the religious aspect of it, of Islam, was against doing that. He said, I got no fight with these Viet Cong, you know.
Right. He was the majority within the nation, a minority, I should say. He was the minority within the violent Nation of Islam.
Right. But, you know, that's where I first heard the name Elijah Muhammad was, okay. You know, after one of Ali's fights. I was probably 5-6 years old. And he, you know, he thanked the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. And I had to ask my dad. Oh, well, you know, I was a boxing fan from the time I was a little kid. And Ali kind of captured my attention because he was so out there. He was so much bigger than life, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And as a little kid, that makes an impression on you. But I had to ask my dad, who's Elijah Muhammad? What's he talking about?
Yeah, I know. And I never could understand the whole premise behind the Nation of Islam. Because when I first learned about it, right off the bat, I said, this group is a bunch of bigots and racists.
Well, and you're right. They are. They were then and they are now.
And they are now. I mean, they actually called for the murder of Jews and all white people. And yet they were allowed to continue on. I just don't get it. You know, anybody can call itself a religion. But there are certain definitions of what constitutionally we consider a religion. And I'm sorry, groups like the Nation of Islam don't meet that criteria.
No, they don't get over that bar at all.
No.
You know,
no.
I mean, they are, and I'll just be point blank about it here, they are the black version of the KKK.
Absolutely.
You know, it's hard to see any real difference. And, You know, so you look at those two groups, Nation of Islam and the Black Panther / New Black Panthers. Okay.
Right.
And these were radical, racist organizations from the word go. Both of them were. Each one trying to out-radical the other, out-racist the other, and neither of them having the ability, honestly, to hold themselves together and form any kind of a cohesive long-term awareness. And I think a lot of that was they just never appealed to the mass black demographic. They appealed to a very narrow segment of the black American demographic.
A minority within a minority. You know, I always say most black people are just like we are. They're God-fearing family people. They're hardworking. They're striving for the American dream like everybody else is. But then you have this small, very vocal minority that tries to speak for the entirety of the black community. And again, it comes back to the problem that the majority of the black community is not standing up to them.
Well, and anybody who has any difficulty trying to figure out exactly who Louis Farrakhan is, go to the blog either at Diane's, you know, thepatriotfactor.blogspot.com or over at my blog, thenationalpatriot.com. We've got a photo in here of Louis Farrakhan shaking hands, smiling, grinning, and slapping the back of Muammar Gaddafi back in the
day. Right. Right. It shows you what kind of person you're dealing with.
You know, I mean, it's just, you know, and you know, while you're in there looking at some of these images, there's images in there that show the Black Power salute that was so famous with the Black Panthers and then the New Black Panthers. But that's not just the Black Power salute. That's also the socialist salute.
Exactly. That fist in the air, folks. You might think the Black Power movement started that. No, it goes back way further than them.
Say hello to Karl Marx.
Yes. These groups are all tied together, whether they're white hate groups or black hate groups. They have certain things in common. And one of them is the embracing of socialism. The fist, the Workers' Party, that whole, you know, mega role. It's just, it's a commonality that's very dangerous.
It really
is. It's based on hate. And when you base anything on hate, you know you're really not going in the right direction.
No, you're really... really not.
No.
You know, it's pretty stunning, actually. Yes. Well, I'll tell you what, folks, let's go ahead and take that top of the hour station ID break. And then when we come back, Diane, I'm going to have you start and kind of go through, you know, leading in to the BLM segment of this. And trust me, folks, there's plenty to come after the BLM part of this.
Well, okay, but the BLM, I'll just do the intro again, because the BLM, you really went into deeply.
All right.
Okay.
We'll just pick it up from there then.
Okay.
All right, folks, you stand by. There's more Right Side Patriots after this.
Guys, Diane Sori from The Patriot Factor on thepatriotfactor.blogspot.com, where I found a home base 7 years ago after becoming one of Facebook's longtime Facebook felons, or so I've been told by the Facebook gods. On my blog, you will find not only my articles, but our Right Side Patriots investigative reports, as well as stories and links to and from well-known writers and bloggers, plus what I call almost daily memes, my snarky take on News of the Day. And for more great takes on the issues of the day, check out the National Patriot at thenationalpatriot.com, where you can read Craig's insight into all the current news happenings. And join us both on Right Side Patriots every Tuesday and Friday night from 7 to 9 p.m. EST at rspradio1.com.
You're listening to Right Side Patriots Radio, the best in conservative commentary, news, and talk, where we do away with the politically correct nonsense and give you the politically direct truth. This is the home of Right Side Patriots every Tuesday and Friday night from 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern with Craig Andreessen and Diane Sorey. We're working to make this country great again from the right and leaving puddles of melted snowflakes on the left. Thanks for listening to Right Side Patriots, your best bet on the internet.
You're listening to RSPRadio1.com.
Welcome back to Right Side Patriots on RSPRadio1.com. Craig Andreessen at the National Patriot and Diane Sorey at the Patriot Factor. 4th of May already, Tuesday night edition of the show. Welcome to it. One final segment of the show to go tonight. Folks, thank you for being with us. As always, if you miss any part of it, go to RSPRadio1.com tomorrow morning, click on the podcast, and become one of our pod people.
Mm-hmm.
We appreciate that. Okay, so we've told you about the Nation of Islam. We've told you about the Black Panthers and the new Black Panthers. So let's get into this a little bit deeper, okay? We're talking about the BLM here, right?
Yes.
And, you know, this is... Now I've lost it again here because I hit my thing again. So we're
okay. Let me give you the intro again.
Okay, yeah.
But one has to wonder if both groups have really disappeared, or have they combined forces and morphed into something else entirely? And it's here where the group known as Black Lives Matter enters the picture.
Well, the BLM, that's Black Lives Matter, of course, came into being back in 2013, and they took full advantage of social media to spread their message of racism, hatred, and violence. You see, they capitalized on the current events, as both the Nation of Islam and the New Black Panthers had done, but they had something that neither of those organizations ever had. The BLM had the backing of the mainstream media. Now, we believe that the Nation of Islam, and for that matter, the New Black Panthers, saw yet another opportunity to attach themselves like leeches to a host entity that would appeal to their base, but provide a much more sought-after, wider base of acceptance. Now, we said earlier that there is a big difference between being tolerated and being accepted. And while the Democrat Party, and now the Party of Liberals, tolerated organizations like the NOI and the New Black Panthers because they brought to the table a necessary voting bloc, they never actually accepted them. That changed with the onset of the BLM. Politically, liberalism could hold back Americans, hold black Americans back, I should say, from achieving the full potential of the American dream. And while the NOI and the New Black Panthers added a needed component to the liberal agenda, radical division to the mix, the BLM was able to expand that division with the assistance of the mainstream media to mainstream liberal voters, and that included white liberal voters. Suddenly, we saw white liberals, albeit mostly millennials, pretending to be in angst over their skin color and thus willing to support the BLM in order to gain a false sense of self-esteem. Seemingly out of nowhere, the BLM went from a hashtag to being financially set overnight. And trust us, that doesn't happen without a major player propping them up from behind the curtain. Now, Diane, we are sure that if you follow the money trail, you'll find George Soros. And to hedge his anti-American bet, you can also be assured he has also funded Antifa.
Yeah, people need to understand that when your money's dry up, you can't basically run your organizations nor do the terrorist acts that the organization is known for. These kind of acts of violence are expensive. You've got to have a pocketbook to put your hand into.
Deep pockets.
Deep.
I mean, you got to have deep pockets to do this on a national level. And while the Nation of Islam and the new Black Panthers were scraping by financially, all of a sudden the BLM was flush with funding. Now, why wouldn't dwindling organizations with a similar agenda get on board the gravy train? Farrakhan has recently spoken in glowing terms of the BLM in interviews, which adds to our belief that his organization has gleefully folded into the BLM radical yet more broadly accepted racist form of community organizing. And the same can be said, for that matter, regarding the new Black Panthers, as past and present members have also championed the actions of the BLM. Okay, it seems clear to us that neither the Nation of Islam nor the new Black Panthers have actually vanished. They simply allowed themselves to be absorbed by the BLM for political and financial reasons. But if the BLM is now running those organizations, the natural question is, who is actually running the BLM?
Okay, folks, simply, it's our belief as right side patriots that former President Barack Hussein Obama is and always has been the behind-the-scenes mastermind, if you will, of the entirety of both the Black Lives Matter organization itself and its ever-expanding movement, and that the infamous George Soros is and remains their pocketbook. Now we'll tell you why we believe as we do. For starters, Barack Hussein Obama still does not believe in the American dream, no matter his words to the contrary. He believed first as a community organizer, then as president, and he still believes now in any and everything that goes against the founding principles of our great American Republic. When one thinks as he does, that our country is a democracy and that our Constitution is an outdated document, a foundation has been laid for both misplaced and ill-conceived grassroots movements to take hold. Remember, BLM started as a youth-led grassroots movement during the Obama presidency, with said movement being founded as a response to supposed state-sanctioned violence against Black people. And with its having no particular titular head at its inception, the old adage that, quote, revolutions begin not with the power, but with the people, end quote, truly began to take hold. And who better to be a not-so-silent voice for the new movement than a young, former Chicago-based community organizer who just happened to be a scholar of what is called, quote, critical race theory. And that's a theory by which legal scholars examine existing laws relating to race. In other words, to make race the center of all public and political discourse. Sounds just like the mindset of certain left-leaning individuals, most notably Obama, and also like the founding principles of Black Lives Matter itself. And with Obama becoming the world's most powerful man with his winning the presidency in November 2008, we bore witness to both American exceptionality and American pride becoming but a farce in the eyes of many. including many black folks who saw in Obama a chance to gain some semblance of equality with white America. White America, who they still blamed for their continued sorry lot in life. And when Black Lives Matter now entered the scene, this disgruntled among said folks not only grasped onto BLM's rhetoric and messages of hate, but saw with Obama inviting their now figurehead leaders to the White House a connection between the organization and the president, we believe was solidified. For while actions, Craig, actions alone usually prove themselves to be louder than just words spoken. And when the two elements are combined together, they are almost unstoppable.
Well, in Obama, a group like the BLM could find several characteristics that were needed. Okay, I mean, charisma is just one of them. We saw that with Louis Farrakhan. We saw that with people like Huey P. Long and Bobby Seale. You know, these were people that were able to get out front of the public. But what else did Obama possess that was very necessary for the BLM to catch on and expand rapidly?
Well, basically what it is Obama's oration skills were well known, coupled with both his not-so-veiled hatred of all white folks and his loving to throw fuel on the pyre of ever-growing racial tensions he himself helped create. Barack Hussein Obama actually became the not-so-behind-the-scenes spokesman and shadowy string puller of the BLM movement itself. Obama, to this day, relishes in spreading Black Lives Matter messages of hate, and it started when he uttered the now and forever infamous words, "If I had a son, he'd look like Trayvon Martin," in regards to the killing of a teenage thug by a white man the media erroneously portrayed as a vigilante. And with those words spoken, Obama knowingly allowed the issue of supposed black oppression to take on a whole new meaning, becoming, according to him, not a black problem, but a problem, quote, all Americans had to deal with. And by his spreading the faux quilt around, Obama helped to make sure that both BLM's message and popularity grew, not just within black communities, but within liberal white communities as well. And it was Obama who also deliberately stepped into the middle of the fray after a grand jury failed to indict Ferguson, Missouri police officer Darren Wilson in the death of thug Michael Brown, thus solidifying Black Lives Matter's presence in the public discourse, saying, quote, "I think it's also important for us to understand that the phrase Black Lives Matter simply refers to the notion that there's a specific vulnerability for African Americans that need to be addressed and taken seriously," end quote. Now, while that makes for good media sound bites, the fact is that such sound bites do indeed suggest that even if Obama's not outwardly saying the words, he's actually thinking, it's obvious that he believes that other lives don't matter as much as black lives do, or why, in BML's defense, would he say, quote, "They're not making these things up," end quote. And with black lives first before all others being the calling card of Black Lives Matter and its varied assortment of miscreants and thugs, including, we believe, absorbed into the fold ilk like the Nation of Islam and the New Black Panthers, one can now see Obama's signature all over everything BLM touches and says. Why else, after thug George Floyd's death, would Obama take to social media to tell BLM sorts and the others wreaking havoc in major American cities how to sustain their momentum? And why else would he publicly praise his own two daughters for taking part in Black Lives Matter demonstrations?
You know, Diane, those are such great questions. Those Those are the resonant questions that you and I were asking each other as we started to put this together. And really what it became was kind of a jigsaw puzzle, right?
Yeah.
And all the individual pieces seemed to just come together.
Yeah. In the case of Obama, when his actions taken are coupled with his multitude of words said, and you mix them together with his numerous other race-baiting actions taken, you come to realize these things speak of a group leader, not of a group follower. And what better group to be the shadow leader of than a group whose calling card is not just the cry of systemic racism, but of a hatred of white America and all she stands for. So, folks, here you have our Right Side Patriots' take on not only why, but where other Black nationalist groups have been absorbed into, and also why the Black Lives Matter movement has so dominated the public discourse. After all, it does seem to have a former president not only leading its charge, but being its spokesman. And with race baiting being a big and ever so profitable business, one can see why the Obama Soros team are damn proud to be part of that business.
I'll tell you, when you really start looking at this and you look at the history of it, you go all the way back to 1930 with the inception of the Nation of Islam. Mm-hmm. And you take it all the way up now to 2021 with the BLM becoming what they've become. Well, you can see a clear pattern in all of this.
Absolutely. I've said since day one, when he uttered those words, if I had a son, he'd look like Trayvon Martin. Here it was, a kid, a thug, who was stealing from other people, who had a criminal record, who had problems with his school that he was in. And you're standing up and saying, if you had a son, it would be like him. Right then and there, Obama showed his true colors. And it was downhill ever since then, going along, of course, with his fundamental changing of America.
But think of the other people. Think of the other people that he could have put in that same category. If I had a son, he'd look like Michael Brown. Mm-hmm. If I had a son, he'd look like Trayvon Martin. If I had a son, he'd look like George Floyd. If I had another daughter, the list just goes on and on. These are thugs. These are miscreants. These are society's outcasts. These are drug abusers, drug users, violent people who have no self-esteem and no regard or respect for anybody else.
Exactly.
But if Obama had a son, it'd be one of them.
Yeah. He's not coming out and saying, if I had a son, he'd be a Tim Scott or an Alan West or a Candace Owens. He's not saying any of that. No, he's going the direct polar opposite. Criminals, drug addicts, thugs, miscreants. That's who he wants as his son?
I know. It's just, it flies in the face of common sense. It flies in the face of logic.
Yes.
Unless you understand where Obama's coming from. And if you read Obama's books and where he describes his distrust and his hatred of white people and how he gravitates towards the socialists and the Marxists and the whole Islam end of things, with him, all of a sudden it starts to make sense. You also have to look at this and go, a guy like Obama, he's got a lot of money, but he doesn't have enough money to fund something like the BLM. But sure as hell, George Soros does. And Soros will fund anything Obama wants because Soros is most interested in destroying this country.
Absolutely. You know what people need to understand? First of all, Obama is not black. He is biracial. He's mixed race. His mother His whole maternal side is white. And for some reason, he hates everything about them. It's like he threw them all aside because he was going to embrace his black half.
Right.
There's something inherently wrong with someone that would do that.
Yeah, it's...
The radar should have been up about Obama long ago.
Well, and I think it was with a lot of people, but not nearly enough.
Right.
You know, and that radar needs to be up even more so, I think, among black Americans. Because yeah. if you look at the people that are running the show, okay, you look at the BLM, you look at Obama, right? You look at what's been running that element of the black community, and yes, it's a minority of the black community. In fact, it's a very small minority of the black right. community, but they're the ones that are making all the noise. So when you look at the type of people that are running those organizations and have throughout history, okay, then you look at the people that they're making champions of.
Right.
It's George Floyd, you know, Trayvon Martin, Michael Brown.
Breonna Taylor. The list is endless.
You have to look at, you know, these are the champions. These are the people that they embrace. These are the people that they put on a pedestal.
Yes.
And you got to look at those organizations, especially if you're in the black community. You have to look at the BLM. They're burning down people's businesses. They're putting people out of work. They're destroying jobs. They're destroying communities. And you got to say, why are we following this? You know, it just doesn't make any sense. We're going to get into a lot more of that on Friday during the show Friday night. But,
right.
you know, you look at these organizations, the Black Panthers, the New Black Panthers, the Nation of Islam, the BLM, and you can see how they've all coalesced. All these older groups have coalesced into the new hot group because none of these groups have ever had an original thought in their heads ever.
Well, you know, you brought up two very good points in the beginning. You know, the funding, of course, but the other point is none of the groups had the media as their in-the-pocket ally. That is critical. The media basically kisses the feet of BLM.
Boy, don't they ever.
Because it's good ratings. The better the ratings, the more revenue the media brings in, the more money's in their pockets, the more control they get. It's a vicious feeding frenzy, and it goes straight down the line.
And straight to the top.
Yes.
I mean, it goes right up to Obama. You know, folks, you got to remember, in the early days of the BLM, this goes back to Ferguson, Missouri, okay? And after Ferguson was looted and arsoned and people were hurt, and in some cases very seriously hurt, if not killed, Obama had the BLM over to the White House for lunch.
He told them,
you guys are doing a great job.
Yeah.
Well, the media seized on that.
The group had already been tagged a terrorist organization, and he had them in the White House.
Yeah, and the media seized on it, and the media is like, boy, this is a great group. Obama likes them, so we got to promote them, and they have from that day forward.
Right.
I mean, the BLM right. can do no wrong, right? I mean, you look at all the crap that went on last year, okay, starting at the end of May, okay, 11 months ago. And the arson and the looting and the assaults and all the stuff that was going on surrounding George Floyd in Minneapolis and then in Portland and so on and so forth. And every night, the mainstream media, every day, 24/7, because that's the news cycle these days, 24/7, the mainstream media would show you businesses that were burning, people that were being assaulted, businesses that were just being ransacked, and they say, well, these are mostly peaceful protests.
Exactly.
Really?
No, there's nothing peaceful about BLM. There never was. And you have to remember now, the leader of BLM now, that woman took mega amounts of money that they brought in and bought herself million-dollar homes. You know, this was money that was supposed to go to help poor black people. Well, she spent that money on herself.
Well,
and yet they still worship at the altar of her feet. You know, it's sick.
It is. It's disgusting. It's degenerate.
Yes.
Okay. But again, follow the money connection, right? Follow the money. The BLM starts all this back in 2013. And they get a toehold because Obama takes them under his wing and the mainstream media starts supporting them because Obama is their de facto spokesperson, right?
Right.
But all the looting, all the rioting, all this and that, they still weren't quite where they needed to be to get that mainstream acceptance. And that suddenly is where Antifa came in. Once Antifa, right, which was mostly white fascist, once Soros paid them to support the BLM, all of a sudden, that's when you saw white people getting down on their knees begging forgiveness for being white people.
Well, if you want to know who Antifa truthfully is really made up of, white spoiled millennials who finally come out of their parents' basements, not to get on with good, profitable lives, but to cause havoc.
Well, because they find in groups like the BLM and Antifa a certain amount of acceptance, because these people lack any self-esteem. They're not productive members of society.
Right.
And all of a sudden, it's like they have a home outside of mom and dad's basement.
Right. And they're suddenly, you know, big fish, or so they see themselves as. This has gotten so, so out of hand. All of this has gotten out of hand.
Mm-hmm.
And you notice Obama's big mouth, along with Michelle's big mouth, it ebbs and flows with the violence. There's a direct corresponding pattern that I've seemed to notice. When Obama talks, it's almost like he's talking in code because the violence goes up. Then when they're both quiet, it seems the violence goes down. It's very strange, but you will see this too if you follow it.
It's true. It's absolutely true. Folks, the name of the special report is A Melting Pot of Aggression, because that's really what it is. Now, if you go to Diane's blog, thepatriotfactor.blogspot.com, or my blog, thenationalpatriot.com, or rspradio1.com, there's three ways that you can get your hands on a link to this article. And what we want you to do is grab this article and share it. Now, I will tell you folks that, you know, social media is tough because we don't violate any of their community standards, you know, but they don't like this. They don't like this. So they hold it back a little bit. They don't allow it to distribute the way it normally would.
Right.
Frankly, we need your help. Get the word out there. Get the truth out there. And don't forget about this Friday show, because we're going to drop truth bombs like every minute on the minute.
Yes. And serious truth bombs, folks. We've had enough. We've had enough of BLM and they were sorted ilk.
Well, and we have noticed some things that other people may have noticed, but they just haven't put all those puzzle pieces together in their head. You know, and we're going to say things that people are thinking, but they've been afraid to say because, you know, they don't want to offend anybody, or they don't want to get in trouble, or they, you know. Tell you what, we're going to say those things.
We're going to offend.
We are. We shall offend.
Yes.
You know, that's just the way it is. But in the meantime, while you're waiting for Friday's show, grab the article anywhere you can, share it everywhere you can. And if you missed any part of tonight's show, go to rspradio1.com tomorrow morning, click the podcast button. Podbean hosts our podcast, and it will be there tomorrow morning.
And I will post it all around social media.
And with that, I think it's time we wrap up tonight's show.
Okay. Nighty-night, folks.
Good night, everybody. See you Friday.